Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolten.
And you have been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic, hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you guys have all been cleared to know the truth. So, Josh, I'd really like to record an episode of our podcast tonight, okay? Just say yes. Come on. It'll be hard, but fun. I promise you. Come on. Say yes. All right. You got 10 seconds, and then I'm walking out that door.
Yes.
Say yes.
Yes.
Okay. There we go.
Okay.
Good. All right. Well, that was pretty easy. See?
Oh, okay.
It'll be fun now. I promise.
Oh, all right. Well, let's go hunting.
Okay. Now, these guns are mine. This dog is mine. These ducks are mine. So I don't know. You can have everything else.
Everything else,
including
okay.
The curtains.
Okay. All right. We have to go all MacGyver on myself here. All right.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us what we were up to this week here?
What were we up to? We were up to our eyeballs in suspense.
Yes.
That's
Maytag.
Maytag.
No. That wasn't it.
Not Maytag. Actually, Ragtag.
Ragtag.
Ragtag, yes. This was episode 21, the penultimate episode of the first season of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Excellent.
I can't believe we're penultimately up to that point. I can use big words. This episode, Ragtag, it aired on May 6th. May 6th. Boy, I tell you, the season premiere seems like so long ago now.
It does.
But on the other hand, you know, the story is just still going by so fast, especially the second half of the season. So Ragtag was written by Jeffrey Bell. It was directed by Roxanne Dawson. Okay? Just a couple people this time. We don't have the team write-ups anymore this week. But
yep.
All right, are you ready?
Yes.
Good. Grab your chart paper and some Sharpies.
Okay.
Because Coulson's going to make a plan to find Ward and Garrett.
Okay, I got everything right here.
You got it? Okay. All right. Yep. Put it up here. Make sure you have more than one page. Now, they're in Cuba, of course, trying to get the GH-325 replicated. That's what Garrett is having his lackeys do, including Reyna, who was kind of under the impression that it was going to be for, you know, centipede purposes. Turns out, you know, Garrett, he wants to keep himself hydrated. Okay. So, Garrett, it seems has some Deathlok metal parts in himself too. In fact, he was the original Deathlok. But his body is failing him, and he's not going to go down without a fight. So our S.H.I.E.L.D. team is tracking him down, but they don't find them in the barbershop / evil lair. They don't find them there. So Fitzsimmons, they get caught, and they get taken aboard the bus by Ward. But Fitz is—he's getting more clever, and he strikes a near fatal blow to the electronics in Garrett. So their GH-325 plans have to be a little bit accelerated. And also in some shocking flashback scenes, there we find out how Ward was recruited by Garrett into his his tough love Big Brother program that he was running back then. so now come join your buddies. We're your buddies, as we discuss the finer points of this Ragtag episode.
They were really trying to make me cry this episode.
They did. They went all old Yeller on us.
Every time the dog showed up, everybody in my family was like, no. I'm like, don't worry, they're not going to shoot the dog yet. I mean...
yet.
Yeah.
So, well, that's your relief.
It was like the I think it's it was Chekhov that the playwright, not the helmsman.
Oh, okay. That completely changes the picture in my mind. Okay,
exactly. It was something about, you know, when you show a gun on a mantelpiece or on the mantle over the fireplace in a play, you know, at some point that gun's got to go off. It's like showing a bomb, you know, under someone's table. It's the same kind of thing. You show a dog and people with guns around, you're like, oh no.
Is that called foreshadowing, or is that something a little different?
It's like foreshadowing. Yep.
Okay.
So, well, before we get into this ragtag episode here, I have to issue an apology to all of our listeners from both of us. We must have been high on some GH325 last week because
you know what? I have to admit something to you. I gave you GH324.
Oh,
so that explains that.
That could be. Well, we were wondering, why did May decide to dig up Coulson's grave? I mean, we kept going on about this, and listeners David, Pedro, and Mal all wrote in. I think maybe a couple other people even on the Facebook page as well, but they wrote in to let us know that Maria Hill had even mentioned this earlier in the episode, the fact that Fury buried all the secrets with Coulson. So boom, that's the secret right there. It was very obvious. It wasn't even really much of a riddle. But thank you guys for pointing that out. I don't know what happened. I remember hearing that, and then by the time we got to the grave digging part, it's like, whoop, it just fallen out of my head.
Well, if you're a regular listener to our show, you know that I don't always pick up on the subtle hints that they give me. Sometimes it has to land right on my face and wiggle in order for me to see it. So I apologize as well. I completely missed that. And then we speculated a little bit. I still say that when she popped up out of the grave, though, she seemed like she kind of knew that all along. She didn't seem a bit shocked to find that. But I give all our listeners props that let us know that I should have known that.
Yeah. As soon as I saw the emails coming in, I was like, oh, I just was totally embarrassed by that. But, you know, that's the great thing. I mean, we've got people like you out there listening to the show and, you know, keeping us honest. So if you hear us, you know, royally screw up something like that, please feel free to send it in to our website or to our attention here at shield@randomchatter.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/agentspodcast. Now, we've been going on about this next point for, I don't know, maybe like a month, and that is the fact that we hadn't heard about the renewal for season two. Well, this morning, as we're recording this podcast, I think it actually, the news came out last night, but I heard it this morning and actually jumped up out of my chair because I saw it first thing when I got into work, the fact that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was renewed finally, woohoo, for season two. So, yes.
Thank you. Awesome news.
On a side note, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files podcast was also picked up for a second season.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so... I thought that was pretty cool.
That would have been uncomfortable if one of them had and the other one hadn't. Especially yes. if the TV show hadn't.
Right. Yeah. If we got picked up and they didn't, that would be embarrassing.
Yeah, it would.
But anyway, so I was very excited about that, and it's great because it seems like, you know, we've invested a lot of time. I know a lot of other people had dropped stuff, and everybody's like, "Oh, you got to come back and start watching the show again." And I would have felt really bad if next week was the last episode, because they really have gotten this great momentum going. So we will continue, and, you know, let's see what's going to happen in season two here. You know, it's I guess we'll be able to speculate a little bit more after next week. But yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't know who's going to live or who's going to die.
Well, we might have a lot to speculate over the summer about that. So, and yeah. I'd just like to give a thank you to Sarah, who listens to our show. And I actually heard the news. She posted it this morning on our Facebook page. And that was the first time I had seen it while I was getting ready for work this morning. So I appreciate her her throwing that out there so we can catch it as soon as possible.
And then, as if that was not news enough, we are also going to get Agent Carter next season as well.
You and I are getting Agent Carter?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, she's going to come.
That's fantastic news.
I'll get her half the time, and you get her half the time.
Okay.
So, you know, we'll trade off each week.
You're always so fair.
Now, at this point, it's unsure whether or not Agent Carter is going to be a second series on, at you know, so like we'll get like a 2-hour block of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, which would be like the best, I think, almost as good as getting like a Green Arrow Flash, block of two shows. But there had been previous rumors, and I think I mentioned this the other week, that S.H.I.E.L.D. would air for the first half of its season straight, then there'd be a break between S.H.I.E.L.D. Halves, and then in the middle, Agent Carter would air, you know, with a shorter season in the middle, kind of as a limited series or something like that. So we'll have to see, but Haley Atwell will be back as Agent Carter, and we can expect to get a lot of cool information about the SSR, the formation of S.H.I.E.L.D., maybe Howard Stark might be in the show as well. Who knows? Tommy Lee Jones might be in there. And we'll have to see. But I think it'll be a really nice period piece with some classic spy stuff going on in the 40s.
I really enjoyed the period comic book stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I Captain America, the first original Captain America movie, that was one of my favorite of the Marvel movies. And it was... It was way
by a Star Wars alumni, you know, so.
There you go. Yeah. So, do you think that's why?
No, I think they did a good job on it.
Oh, okay.
That's coincidental.
Well, I agree with you. He did do a good job on it. But anyway, I'd put that out there. I really kind of enjoy those period things. They just feel a little different, and I kind of like different, you know. I mean, there's so many comic book genre stories out right now that it's nice to have something that stands out like that.
Well, and the Agent Carter one shot, I think, is probably my favorite one shot because it shows that, you know, she's got this, she's kind of a liberated woman in a time when, you know, women are supposed to, you know, women were in the workforce, but then the men start returning back from the war and they were expected, I guess, to go back home and, you know, they weren't really equal in that way. And she shows that she can take care of herself and, you know, single-handedly go in and destroy, you know, a warehouse full of, you know, 5 or 6 bad guys and, you know, handle herself very well. And the fact that they had teased the Scorpio and the Zodiac key and everything in that, that really intrigues me as well. So there's some cool things they can do with that series. So you can bet we will be talking about that a little bit next year. Probably will not have its own show, unfortunately, unless somebody else on this network decides to pick that up. But there will definitely be a crossover and discussion for it on the S.H.I.E.L.D. show, I believe. And then this week also saw the final piece of art for season one. I really hope they continue doing this for season two because this has been fun. But the newest print is called Beginning of the End. And now it's it wasn't really – it's not an artist's name for that one. It's got let's see. Who is the one that did that? It's it was a collective or something like that. Phantom City Creative,
yeah.
So now you when I showed this to you, you had an interesting comment to start with.
Well, you know, I recognized it as sort of a play on the what do you call that poster from the beginning of the season?
The season
the promo poster, I guess.
Yeah, the promo poster for the season with the characters all standing together.
Yeah. So I kind of recognize it as that, but it was interesting because this is the season finale print, right? Because it's the one for the episode that's the season finale. Mm-hmm. And it's got the Hydra symbol and everything, but it's all the original characters. So I just wondered, hey, how come Trip's not in it?
Right. Well, your point to me was why is Ward there?
Mm-hmm.
So we've got this Hydra logo smashing through the Shield logo. Shield logo's kind of crumbling and in pieces, and then it's our six original agents from the beginning of the season. Now the interesting thing about this, they're all rendered in black and white, like hand drawn from that original promo stills. But if you notice, Ward is the only one that's highlighted with the Hydra red.
Yeah,
which I thought was interesting.
How light reflects off surfaces, and he's got just a touch of red on the edge.
Mm-hmm. So, but I find that interesting because obviously that means he's kind of infected. And I also find it interesting. Next week's episode is called "The Beginning of the End," where three or four episodes ago we had the end of the beginning. So that's again, this kind of whole circular play, Hydra and Shield being two sides of the same coin, everything kind of comes around. So I'm intrigued to see what they're going to do. I'm wondering how much like the pilot this episode might be, if there are going to be any other callbacks. I'll have to pay attention to that.
Hmm. That's a good thought. I wonder if I have to go back and watch it.
Yeah, they seem to be doing that, a lot. There's a lot of little, kind of references. They're going back. Very subtle stuff, but I think a case can be made that, they are there. So, these references.
But thank you. That's what we were begging for the first half of the season, is a lot of those subtle references. So, I guess it's harder at the beginning of a series when you don't have anything to reference because there hasn't been anything before that, But
yeah, they were setting the groundwork at that point, and now, things now reference back to those.
Yeah, that's good. Well,
pieces,
but our point was, they did have a groundwork in the Marvel universe. So,
right.
But they're doing that now. So no complaints for me. Looking good.
Yep. I'm very excited that they'll be back, and you can bet that we will be here continuing to discuss it with you guys all through next season then. All right. So let's get on to Ragtag. So, people may not be necessarily familiar with this term. It's often used to describe a group. A lot of times, like soldiers, people talk about, there's like a ragtag band of brothers kind of thing like that.
Right.
It's not
what you put before a word on Twitter if you want people to, get attention to it. That's not what it is.
Right, right. That's a hashtag.
Hashtag. Okay, yeah,
hashtag.
Right.
Yes, right. Got it. So the definition I found is a group of people perceived as disreputable or undesirable, which I think is great. That fits perfectly in with our group and with SHIELD. But it can also be, as I said, earlier with this whole flip side and everything like that, can be applied to Hydra, right? They are also disreputable and undesirable from the standpoint of our team. They're also younger, from what I understand, based on the cybertech scientists.
Scientists.
Yeah.
An interesting scene.
So, our group is kind of, they're outside of the system now. They are, as I think it was Fitz pointed out, they're vigilantes, and they're having to, make it on their own. They really don't have any resources to speak of, except for that the one jet, and then pretty much whatever they've got on them. I guess Sky can still has her computer, right? So she's setting up all sorts of fake IDs for them and covering their tracks and everything like that.
So still more than me and you.
Yeah,
a jet and a powerful computer, but. You know what, I you mentioned the cybertech scientists, and since we're talking about ragtag, and I agree with you as far as Hydra goes, but I thought the conversation with them was kind of interesting when they were talking about Hydra. They talked about them like, okay, well, this is just kind of a legitimate group out there now, this Hydra, that took over SHIELD, and people from Hydra have been talking with it. I thought that was odd. Did that
catch
you?
That's so weird. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, of course we're working with the bad guys here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's almost like they're not perceived as the bad guys, just more like a competitive group of against S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right, right. Well, and the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. is at a point now where they are so, you know, nobody trusts them. I mean, it's like, you know, stuff's got out in the media and the press and everything like that. You know, at the end, we see that the military doesn't trust them. Well, we've known that, you know, that's the case since General Talbot was chasing him the other week and everything like that. So, yeah, it just didn't sit quite right with me.
Yeah, well, and
that was a weird scene too. I mean, it was just they were trying to be funny.
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah, it was kind of a cute scene. I had actually seen that scene before the entire episode because that was one of them that they were using to promote this week's episode. They had posted on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Facebook page or something. I saw it somewhere on the internet. But
okay, yeah, I didn't watch that. So. Well, then the other thing I wanted to bring up as ragtag is Agent Ward, back when he was just Grant Ward in the flashbacks. He was a teenager, I'm guessing. I'm thinking he's probably like 15 or 16 in those flashbacks.
Well, how old do you think he is now?
Well, say about 30? He was 30 or 31 is what I was figuring.
So, yeah, he would have been about 15 because it was 15 years ago in the flashbacks. So that's about right. He was tall, though. He was a tall 15-year-old.
Yeah, with a bad wig. I understand why for the 15 years ago part they used a different actor, and then for the 10 years ago part they used, you know, the same actor with, you know, they younged him up a little bit, I guess, or whatever. But that never quite works as well as – I mean, I thought the younger actor sounded like he had the vocal intonations down, and maybe – I don't know if they were doing like a voiceover or if they had the older actor doing a voiceover for the younger actor. So
yeah,
that he sounded the same or if they just found someone that sounded like him.
Yeah, I couldn't really tell. I wonder why. Well, I don't know. I was going to say, I wonder why they didn't do what they did to Bill Paxton to kind of make him look younger. But I don't know. Maybe that would be hard even so. I mean, because it just looked like kind of a. Maybe makeup or computerized removal of the wrinkles, and you probably couldn't make Ward look like a 15-year-old without using somebody different. But
yeah, that's the thing when you're trying to get someone to make them look like under 20. But I mean, who knows what that really looks like? You know, because you see those high school shows, and you know the people playing the high school kids are 25, 26.
Oh yeah, no, trust me. As a teacher, I see people come up to me all the time, and they say, "Hey, Director Stolte." Okay, they don't call me director, but and I have no idea who they are because they look completely different than when I had them. So I can see that, and just for me personally, and this is for anybody else that would put a kink in their craw or whatever. I don't. I think I just invented a new phrase. But I don't mind stuff like that. That stuff to me is just part of storytelling. Things don't have to be perfect and realistic and computer generated. I mean, they could have done what they did in like Captain America, you know, to make Steve Rogers look small and weak. And I mean, they really went to town on that to make it look realistic. Yeah. But so anyway, it didn't bother me. But yeah, I agree with you. He didn't really look as much like Ward as he probably would have in real life.
The cinematic term is suspension of disbelief.
And exactly.
How far are you willing to go? So you're willing to go further.
And I won't, but I could really kind of get up on my soapbox about that issue because I don't think audiences are as willing to put that suspension of disbelief into play as they're watching stories these days. And I think that's part of the things you hear about complaining about movies and I don't know. Anyway, I won't talk about it. It kind of irritates me, so I don't want to get into it here.
Well, we may have to revisit this in the hiatus.
Okay. All right. I wouldn't mind because I like talking about it. I try to get people to enjoy themselves a little more and stop worrying about these tiny little details. But
all right. So we're going to take that and we're going to put it in the parking lot right over here, and we'll come back to that later.
Stick a pin in it. All right.
Just put a pin in it. All right. So anyway, Ward in the flashbacks is kind of ragtag, right? He's disreputable. He's undesirable. He's killed his family. Do you believe that he did not know that his brother was in the house when he set it on fire?
No, sir. I do not believe that. No. No,
that
I
was
think
pretty... Wow. It'll be interesting to see a little bit more of his backstory just to see how far he was pushed. And maybe they won't go much further than this. But, you know, from the two snippets that we've gotten about him, the one little flashback and kind of him describing his brother to Sky last week. Sure, you know, and like his parents don't sound like they were much nicer at all either. You know, it's... horrible life that he had, but
yeah, I
don't know that you know makes everything that he did okay.
No, but it explains it. Yeah, I mean it explains it. You know, I mean there's a lot of things that you can explain people's actions. That doesn't they still have to be responsible for them though, especially as you know they are adults and but
right.
There's my teacher thing again, but so. Now you said his family was dead, but I don't think his whole family is dead, are they? Because no, it
I'm
says
sorry,
his family was pressing charges, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I guess they weren't dead. I guess they were able to get out, because that's right, because in the lie detector test, he said he had a brother, two brothers, a sister, and his parents or something like that. So
yeah.
Maybe none of them died. Maybe he just burned the house down, I guess.
Well, you know, get ready to type us another email if you missed this, but I wasn't entirely sure, and I did watch it twice to see. I wasn't entirely sure if his brother did die. His brother may have died in the house, but the rest of his family I don't think did.
Okay.
So anyway, because they were, you know, it was, and I think even Garrett said something about, you know, go back and be what your family, well, I don't know. Anyway, I don't think his family's dead. Maybe.
Okay. All right. Anyway, I don't think that's the important, that's not the takeaway part of that whole, storyline. It was to, you know, see basically what Garrett did to Ward to help shape him into the agent and person that he is today by, you know, he was really pretty plain with him, you know. I mean, I don't think he was, you know, we talk about how, like, the bad guys never lie and mm-hmm. the good guys are always the ones that are keeping secrets. That's kind of what Garrett did. I mean, he was like, you know, I said I work in a secret organization. Well, it's more like a secret organization with inside a secret organization. And, you know, I mean, he was kind of just laying it all out there for him. I was waiting for him to try to manipulate him in some way, but he was only manipulating him, you know, to better himself, I guess, you know, by saying, you know, I'm leaving, I'll be back, and you got to take care of yourself. And, you know, I guess if he wanted to, he either would have died, he could have hiked himself out, or he decided he wanted to stick with it and make something, you know, better of his life because he thought that's what Garrett had to offer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he kind of realized, like I said earlier, I think it was tough love. He really was trying to make him be completely independent with no, I'm going to say, quote unquote, weaknesses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. And I mean, you could argue that he did a pretty good job.
He appears to have, well, it's like you see in a lot of films when they're doing, you know, military training and stuff like this.
Yeah.
You have to break the individual. I mean, and this, I never went through the military, but I mean, I believe this is, you know, part of their training, their indoctrination, whatever, is that you have to break the individual down and be able and rebuild them in a way, you know, so that they will function within the organization, you know, to follow orders and you know, be a soldier or whatever it is. So, I mean, that's what happened to Ward here as well. He, you know, was all screwed up. And so Garrett, like, basically stripped him down to nothing. It's like, if you're going to survive, you got to figure out how to do it for yourself. And, oh, by the way, here's my dog, you know, for companionship. So I'm going to ask you, did Garrett give Buddy the dog to Ward as a as something to get attached to so that later he could teach him about this, you know, not having attachments? Do you think that was planned from the get-go?
Or yeah,
is that just
I
something
do.
That he saw?
No, I think he did. I also think he left him there as like a one tool to use, like a place to get started. So he wouldn't just hike out of there or wouldn't just give up. So it was kind of like
So Buddy is like the first tool for him to use.
Right, right. And I think, I mean, that's kind of what I got. But I do
that's
still
a good
think
idea.
I do still think he gave him for the attachment. I mean, I think that was his intention all along. Although he was there for how long did he leave him out there? 5 years? I mean, how he was living out there.
So he dropped him off and then he was gone for 6 months.
Right.
And then when he came back, let's see.
I think in the flashback where it was, you know, the more adult ward, it said 10 years earlier.
Okay, so I guess it was after the 6 months when he came back, he had a shotgun and he had the tent and because he figured out how to raid the cabins around him.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 5 years, yeah, that's when he came back and that's when they were discussing the bombing in Sarajevo and Garrett was talking about how he basically stitched his guts or, you know, taped his guts back into him so that he could hike his way out of there. And that's when he realized that S.H.I.E.L.D. was not, you know, they didn't care much any more for him than any, you know, thing else that he wasn't right. That. He was just expendable, basically.
Right. Although we did learn that duct tape has another use, so that's good.
Yeah. Yep. Why couldn't they just use that on the Deathlock parts then? I don't know. Maybe they didn't have it on the bus. So, let's see.
My point was that Buddy was getting up there, you know? I mean, you figure he must have been 6-7 years old, but...
Oh, sure.
Well, but yeah. Still, so he's really attached to him because he'd been there for 5 years.
Okay, so. Right. So then Garrett tells him that he's got to kill Buddy. You know, it's like, all right, we're going to leave because you got accepted into the operations school because that was the other reason that Garrett came back at that 5 year point to tell him that he was accepted into S.H.I.E.L.D. Ops, or the S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy, the operations academy. And so he says, all right, well, the only thing you got to do is take care of the dog here. And you know, it's like, oh wow, that was a real tough scene to watch, especially if you are a pet lover. And then they show that flashback was being worked back and forth with Ward, or Garrett told Ward that he also needed to, let me see, I wrote down what the verb was he used here. He says he needs to put down Fitz and Simmons. That's what Garrett asked him to do. So, well, technically, that's what Ward did. He put them down into the Gulf of Mexico. So, he's not really lying. But anyway, so... I guess it was the sequence of events here was that Ward is looking at the dog and then he fires into the air and we see the dog take off. And then it cuts back to the plane. Ward's preparing to dump Fitz and Simmons. And, you know, Fitz and Simmons are begging for their life and that Ward, you know, Fitz continues to go on about Ward not being evil and all this kind of stuff or that it's not him. And then... we cut back to seeing the dog through the rifle scope of the sniper rifle that Ward was using earlier in that scene.
Right.
But Ward, I don't think Ward had that on him. But my question is, who was watching through that scope?
I think the way that it was set up, they built it to make us think that it was Ward, and he made that decision to not be weak and to not have any attachments. And even though he had originally let Buddy go ahead and take him out anyway. But you're right. I don't think he had that rifle either. And that rifle was powerful because he took down that deer from like more than a mile away.
It was like 1,800 yards or something like that.
Yeah.
Like you said.
So that's a really long ways. That's a good scope. So, I mean, the only other person I could think of is Garrett. So Garrett would, I'm thinking Garrett took the dog out.
So here's what that's an interesting read. I read it this way, is that Ward let the dog go because he's talking about attachment and everything like that. And they're, you know, they're flashing back or they're flashing between him making the decision to lose his attachment to Fitz and Simmons versus him losing his attachment to Buddy. And so he decides to let Buddy go. And I think Buddy goes. And I think that was Garrett looking through the scope. Now, I don't know if we're supposed to assume that Garrett shot Buddy through the scope. But
yeah, because they didn't show it.
Right, because I think Garrett, or whoever was looking through the scope, assuming it was Garrett, was just watching to see what happens. Right? So he gave him a test, and he wanted to see how it played out.
I agree with that.
So,
but, and here's what happened. I missed this the first time because I thought there was a shot fired. And the second time I watched it, I realized it wasn't a shot. It was cutting back to the scene, you know, in present day, and Ward was, you know, pulling a lever or something like that. You know, it was kind of a loud noise a little bit. But but here's the thing. Now, here's why I think this is kind of my speculation with Garrett's character. I think Garrett did shoot him. Number one, I think that's, you know, he was using the scope of the rifle that they had shown earlier. So, again, kind of like, you know, foreshadowing. But it fits with what he told Ward to do with Fitzsimmons, because there was really no reason to kill Fitzsimmons right then. Garrett was essentially dying. Ward was trying to take care of him. He says, go take him out. Was that a weakness? So it was like he was testing him again. So I almost feel like he shot Buddy. Garrett shot Buddy to punish Ward for having that weakness, like a lesson, teaching him a lesson. Mm-hmm. And then so it's almost like this is another test. It's like he's still testing him. All right, now go take out Fitzsimmons. So and see if he is loyal. See if he's going to do it. He was giving him a hard time. You know, Ward was giving Garrett a hard time about. Letting Deathlok almost kill him last week.
Yeah.
And so I think Garrett's feeling like maybe he can't fully trust Ward because he's starting to show these emotions towards Sky and towards Fitz and Simmons. And
that's possible. Yeah.
So I don't know. And I don't even know if they'll ever show what happened to Buddy. They may not even ever let us know, but either way, we know that Garrett's bad dudes and that he does that kind of stuff to mess with Ward.
Oh yeah, I mean Garrett's a total ass, and he's messing with everybody.
Is that where part of the Deathlok stuff was?
Yeah, he's got more lead in his ass than in his brains. So, I feel that it was a test as well. It's like, you know, I'm dying. I'm potentially dying. Are you going to do what I said? And is it because you failed the last time, or is it because, you know, he's just continuing to test him? And that's where it was just not clear, I guess.
Yeah.
For me. So,
yeah, it was intentionally vague, I think.
Yeah.
I think we're still probably going to see some sort of redemption of Ward. I don't know how it'll play out. But I think the intention of the writers is to redeem this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's where, and that seems relatively like a safe bet, that it's, you know, kind of obvious as to what's going on. So, but you know, they may surprise us, and I'm sure there will be many surprises on the path to. Even if it is redemption for him,
well,
there'll be a lot of surprises.
Hey, redemption could include him dying.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's not out of the stretch of possibility. But I still think in the end he'll show him, prove himself to be good. I still like Trip though, so I hope they keep him around.
They haven't told us who's coming back next season, so
we'll
see. All right. While we're talking about this whole Garrett and Ward situation here. I want to discuss this with you. So Garrett seems to be equating attachment to weakness, whereas Coulson feels like attachment is the only thing that he's got that's kind of keeping, you know, him together, right? Because if it wasn't for his friendships with Sky and with May and these other people in his life, you know, he probably would have just quit and walked away a long time ago. I mean, there's lots of... You know, Coulson's had lots of issues and stuff like this. So Do you think that attachment actually is a weakness? And, you know, let's just discuss that a little bit.
Are you asking my personal philosophy? Whether yeah. attachments? Are you trying to flush out Hydra agents here? Or what do you... me. So no. I'll talk about Coulson first. And you're right. He's all about attachment. You know, he's got Lola. He's got his Captain America trading cards. He just gushed when they brought out the bag of tricks from Tripp's grandpa. Yeah.
Yeah.
he's all about attachment. And I think what he sees as strength is the loyalty of the people that he truly trusts. He truly trusts the people of his team, you know, I mean, and that bit him with Ward, of course, but, and he truly trusts, you know, Nick Fury and, you know, just a few other key people. He trusts them. And that's the source of his strength. And you can see when he loses those attachments, how that kind of is his weakness. However, when you say weakness, okay. Weakness as where somebody could exploit that, maybe so. But see, I think Garrett's lack of attachment is his weakness because that's what makes him the bad guy. Mm-hmm. That's what keeps him from being a hero. It's hard to explain, but he has so much anger in him because he was attached to S.H.I.E.L.D. He was very loyal to S.H.I.E.L.D. And he feels that that was ripped away by them not coming to get him when he was dying. Mm-hmm. And so he saw that as a weakness, and it has proven to keep him alive. But, you know, at what cost?
Right. I mean, his humanity and his soul appear, you know, to not be there. I mean, it's, you know, he's dying. He's only got... What was he saying? He only had a couple weeks left to live, according to the Cybertech folks.
Yeah.
And
you know, from a existential point of view or something like that, you could say that is his weakness. You know, the fact that he tries not to be weak is that's what makes him weak. It's kind of the easy way out, the lazy way out or something, I guess.
It's the irony, I guess, in it.
Yeah, I guess it's definitely not easy, so I suppose irony would be, yeah.
Right, so, but basically he's been living the last 25 years of his life not generating attachments, you know, working for S.H.I.E.L.D. because it was sometime just prior to 1990 that he got injured so that he was able to become the first candidate for Deathlok. Or, you know, as the first Deathlok. So, you know, seems to have been a real turning point in his life. And he, you know, has just kind of been going downhill from there and not trusting anybody. Because that was the other point that he makes is that, you know, don't trust anyone. Don't even trust me. Right? So it's every man, you know, basically every man for himself and... You know, don't trust anyone, and
I don't
what
even,
a horrible life.
It is a horrible life, and I don't even think it's a selfish kind of thing. You know, he's not one of those evil guys that just wants to take over to have all the power so they can be in charge of everything. That's mm-hmm. that's a selfish point of view. This is more of like a defense mechanism. Like, you know what? I don't want to get hurt again, so I'm not going to let anybody near me. I'm not going to attach myself to somebody that can be taken away to hurt me again. Where, you know, and I don't think Ward has had the kind of experience in his life that would put him in a position to be like Garrett. And that's why I think he let Buddy go. You know, he felt as if he was doing justice on his brother when he tried to kill him, what we're assuming he tried to kill him.
Right.
Because his brother, from what we found out, was a very, you know, bad person.
I mean, he was not only hurting his other siblings, but forcing Ward to hurt his other siblings.
Right. Right. So I think Ward was trying to do what he felt was right. I don't really think Ward has had the experience of, you know, I've been betrayed. it's more of, look, I've been abused, and now I'm going to do my best to be strong through that. Mm-hmm. And that's a completely different view than Garrett.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel that Ward is has gotten over the past few episodes to be a much more complex character, which is interesting. Garrett still, I mean, while I think he's a fun character to watch because he's quippy, and you know, it's interesting to root either, you know, for him to do these bad things or to root against him. The insight we've gotten into his backstory here, I mean, he's still relatively two-dimensional. There's just not a lot other, you know, qualities to him. I mean, it's like
he's easy to understand.
Yeah. And he's been living his life, like, you know, in the same perpetual state for this amount of time. I mean, you could look at it this way, that fact that he got blowed up real good, and then has these, you know, deathlock parts put into him, and he is more of a robot now, you know, emotionally and figuratively, than he was prior to that. And I think you could even argue that Mike Peterson in these episodes shows more humanity than Garrett, and Peterson is more machine than Garrett.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, just some interesting stuff, I think, that they're doing there. So, all right. Well, let's. I also want to talk a little bit before we run out of time here about Raina. We got. I think we got a lot of interesting stuff to talk, or a lot of interesting things that she mentioned that we can find out more, and of course how it ties into Sky. So, you would. And like, I think I missed this part, but Raina says that Sky is like her. Was that what actually happened there?
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I didn't write down the exact quote, but she was talking to Ward, I think.
Yeah, when she was talking to Ward about the drugs and stuff, right?
And she said something about she has something inside. Sky has something inside her that Raina has, or you know, something like that.
Oh, right.
They were comparing. She was comparing herself to her, which I thought was incredibly interesting. You know, how? I mean, what? She didn't say. She didn't say what is inside her. So.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff like that. She said that she likes special people with gifts. She likes that what is inside is about to be revealed. She thought that Garrett was more interested in transformation than he actually is, and it turns out he really is only interested in keeping himself alive. So she's not being controlled by anybody. She's there of her own free will. She doesn't have one of those eyeball things in her, we find out. And, you know, she's there because she's curious. She wants to, you know, there's some next level of evolution that she is trying to bring out. She also tells the story about in the Hunan province, there was a massacre of an entire village by these two monsters. And it turns out the monsters were the baby's parents, which links back to the whole story about Sky being this baby found in the Hunan province and this 084. So now I think when they use the term monster, because they used the term monster twice in this episode, once to describe these creatures that destroyed the village in the Hunan province, and wants to describe Deathlock punching the head off of this drug cartel guy, which I thought was just a humorous way that Garrett described it. So I don't think they are literal monsters. I think they are going to turn out to be aliens. I'm wondering if one of these, quote, monsters is the alien that was at the guest house, which would be one of Sky's parents.
Oh.
I don't know.
Interesting. Mother or father?
Probably the dad.
Yeah. He wasn't wearing a shirt, so that's, you know, this is the ABC, probably right. I hadn't even thought of that. You know, I was trying to think what kind of monster. Wow.
So And I mean, you know, you've got this whole thing. I mean, Sky appears to be human. You know, there's, you know, it's not like a werewolf or anything like that, that, you know, when the moon changes, but who knows? This is another big mystery they've been teasing, and I bet that we will get a tease. I would love to see, like, the last 30 seconds of the episode be a tease about what she is, and something happens with her off screen that everybody's reacting to, but we won't get to see it until next year. That would totally be frustrating, but I would love to see them open that can of worms now that they know that they're coming back.
I'll take a good cliffhanger. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. That would be really exciting. So, you know, but I don't know. I mean, it could be, geez. I mean, when people have speculated online, I mean, there is no exact person in the Marvel Universe that Sky appears to be a doppelganger for. But when you think about, you know, the potential for aliens, you know, creatures of some kind from, you know, inner space or outer space or whatever, there, you know, the possibilities are unlimited as to what they could do. And it's just, how far are they going to go on the show? We got Guardians of the Galaxy coming up here in August. So, you know, the realm of possibilities will bust wide open at that point. So I could definitely see them coming back after that. And, you know, linking some element of the spacefaring aspect of the Marvel Universe into this show in some fashion.
I would like to see that. I would like to see that. So, I also, since we're talking about Reyna real quick, I would like to see her stick around. She's becoming a much more interesting character to me.
She's very intriguing.
Yeah, and I really like the actress. I think she's doing a great job. There was a couple. I don't know how I want to describe this. Hokey seems like too strong of a word, but little interactions between her and Ward, namely when she was kind of goading Ward into, you know, she was threatening to go tell Garrett what was happening. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, you just tell me Garrett's busy. Yeah. You know, but, yeah. But I like the actress. I like the character, and, I'd like to see her stick around for a while. So hopefully she lasts a few more episodes.
Yeah, and so we can find out a little bit more about what's inside her, what's making her tick. I'm sure she will be continuing to be key to the whole Sky storyline, because it seems like her usefulness in terms of the Garrett Hydra Centipede storyline is pretty much fulfilled, right? She's done what she needs to do. She's made this serum, but that's as much as that can be made, right? That was like, well, I guess at this point, I guess they can make more at some point if they were to have Sky or Coulson, right? Because they could use something from their blood, probably, because it seemed like it was the samples they were getting from Fitzsimmons that they were able to, she was able to manufacture this kind of fake GH325. So I don't know. It was a slightly different color than the other one. It seemed to be a little bit different, and it affected Garrett in a much more dramatic way. So as we were discussing, I think it was either last week or the week before, the fact that Coulson was, I guess this was last week, Coulson was dead when he had the drug applied, and that's what he was concerned about with test subjects, is that it, you know, they would go crazy because they realized they were dead, so that's why his memories were reset. Sky wasn't dead at the time, and neither was Garrett. But Garrett had a different, you know, type of drug administered to him. It wasn't necessarily the exact same formulation as Sky and Coulson received, and very dramatic scene. I love the fact that, like, you could see him, like, spit in the air, and there's all this, like, spittle and stuff all over his shirt and his face when they cut back to him. Uh-huh. I just thought it was very visceral.
Yeah.
For that. And then, let's see, I wrote this down because I thought this was an important line that he said. So where is it? Reyna asks him, Well, first off, we see him go through an extremis change where, like, when she injected him with the GH325 that she created, he had an extremis reaction where his skin was glowing, like the characters did at the beginning of the season before they exploded, or in Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3, yeah.
Yep. And then Reyna asks, "What are you feeling?" And he just kind of stares back at us and is like, "The universe," which I thought was really interesting. It's there is an aspect of the Marvel Universe called cosmic awareness, which characters like Captain Marvel, who is a Kree soldier, Mar-Vell, M-A-R-V-E-L-L, has, and, you know, links to that outer space element that, again, is coming up in Guardians of the Galaxy. So I'm wondering, you know, what kind of superpowers does he have now? What kind of interaction with, you know, can he, like, does he have ESP now? Does he really have ESP now? You know, it's all sorts of interesting things like that that could
talk about being happening. A clairvoyant enough. It'll really happen.
It'll really happen. That would be that's cool. So I'm not sure what else is going to come of that. I mean, again, there's so many different ways they can go with this. It kind of, you know, stumps me. Even as a fan of the comic books, there's so many different things they can do. So I'm really excited to see what they've got up their sleeves. So, I think that's pretty much, those are the big points of this episode that we want to touch on. There are some smaller things and some references here. You want me to go ahead and get into these?
Yeah. Let's take a look at those. There's some good ones.
So, speaking of Garrett, at least once he says to Ward, he goes, "Hey, buddy, I'm not a mind reader," which I thought was funny, given the fact, like you had just mentioned, that he calls himself the clairvoyant, and then in one of the flashbacks, he actually says that he's not a mind reader. you brought up an interesting point about Deathlok here. Why don't you want to grab that?
Well, this was the end, wasn't it? There were other Deathloks in the comics. So when they were looking in the filing room, which was interesting, we didn't really talk about why nothing was digital over at CyberTech. But
that would be a pain in the butt.
Yeah, but safer, you know? I mean,
totally.
So it was an interesting way to do that. But anyway, there's other Deathloks in the comics, which I have to admit, I wasn't aware of before this, before doing a little bit of research. But as they're looking in the files, you know, they find out that Garrett was the first Deathlok. So does that mean there's been others? And I found out in the comics there was Luther Manning and Michael Collins, I guess, were names of other Deathloks. So are we going to see some of them maybe?
Well, and would they still be alive, first off? Because, I mean, if there's a lot of prototype equipment, I mean, how many of these people died? I know they were talking about these people at the end being centipede soldiers, but their eyes started to glow red. So, I mean, I know that the reason Deathlok's eye glows red is because it's just the explosive eye thing that they put in there. So maybe that's all these other soldiers have. Maybe they're still just that kind of phase one centipede soldier like we saw mid-season in the shipping crates when they were fighting Mike Peterson was with S.H.I.E.L.D. for that one episode. So I don't know. But it might be. I would love to see him name drop a couple of these other Deathloks as maybe just previous recipients that might not still be alive or something like that. That would be cool. Also, at the end, did you notice the guy had the Berserker staff?
Oh, that's what that was.
Yes.
So
all that good hardware that they've picked up over the season are starting to come back here. So, you noted in our notes here that Ian Quinn was
Ian
talking
Quinn
about
at the end, yeah.
Yeah, these super soldiers being better, stronger, faster, which I think we both flashed back to our $6 million man days as a kid. Is that the exact wording that they use in $6 Million?
I think so. Yeah, at the very beginning of each episode, we can rebuild him, make him better, stronger, fast. So maybe when super soldiers move, they're all going to go. back.
That would be great.
That would be kind of cool.
I'd love to see Oscar Goldman be one of the scientists that work in firm or something like that. So.
Or a super soldier.
Yeah. And then Trip. So the one of the centerpieces to this episode was Trip showing up with his granddad's old suitcase full of Howling Commando action toys. Basically, it's a vintage looking suitcase. And here's exactly what I thought. Now, remember, we didn't find out until about 3 days after the episode aired that season two was renewed and that we'd be getting the Agent Carter series. But I swear to you, I promise you in this fact that I was watching this episode and they put this suitcase down and he opens it up with all these old time goodies in it. And I'm like, oh, this is totally going to tie in with Agent Carter because these are going to be the stuff that they use in the in an Agent Carter series. So they've got to be doing an Agent Carter series now. And I was right.
Look at that.
So, but we got all sorts of cool throwback gadgets. Someone mentioned that they, I think it was Sky, says they look like something you'd order from the back of a comic.
Yeah.
And then Fitz has the Joy Buzzer, which, I mean, these things do. They look like those cheesy ads from the 1960s and 1970s comics.
I love those ads.
But they've got, you know, obviously really cool, like, high-tech functionality. So there's an EMP Joy Buzzer. Which I thought was used to great effect, and I loved the fact that Fitz was the one to get back, to get back at Ward, but really to get Garrett. I mean, I think that's key for his character. He's really come a long way as kind of this, from this naive and, well, he's still a little naive, I guess, but just kind of weak. I don't know if I want to say weak.
He's a little weak. I mean, he is a scientist and not a soldier or a commando or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a scientist, but he has got a serious, serious grudge against Garrett. I mean, he really, really wants to be the one to take him out.
Yeah, yeah, and he almost did it, too.
So, yeah.
They also had little lapel buttons that ran off of a UHF frequency. There was the Hypno Beam, the prototype version. There was a cigarette laser. There was a quarter walkie-talkie with tracking system in it, and then a harpoon gun as well. I think that was everything that they talked
about.
Yeah,
they showed a great shot, and you can find stills of this on the internet. I'll even put one on our Facebook page, but of the open suitcase with everything in it. And they don't, you know, they don't label it or anything, but there's some cool stuff. I think there's a tape recorder in there. It looks like there's a pack, you know, the pack of cigarettes that that Fitz took out and burned the curtains with. There's something with white stars, like a blue, like flag, you know, like an American flag. It's blue with some white stars. I don't know what it is, but it screamed Captain America to me. I don't know. Don't know what that was all about. It looks like maybe there's a bomb or something. Some dynamite wrapped up or something. But so check it out. Look at that. Look at that screenshot of the bird's eye view of the case.
Yeah. So you'll get that up on our Facebook page?
Yeah, yeah. I'll load that up there.
Cool. There was also a reference with the Cybertech scientists about, well, first off, they had the Sleepy Sleep gun, which is a nice parody of the Night Night gun. I think that's just the fact that scientists come up with these really lame names in the Marvel universe here. But they also mentioned when they were talking about the dendrotoxin bullet, they're like, oh, yeah, we took this and we made an aerosol grenade from it that disperses this toxin, which is what we saw in the episode called Tracks, when it was thrown from the back of the train and stunned Ward and Coulson so that they thought that the train just disappeared. We also found out that the I'm assuming that the barbershop was a SHIELD facility at one point, because I think it was May mentioned that Cuba originally had a SHIELD facility in it, or SHIELD originally had a facility in Cuba. And that would make sense because, as we discussed the other week, it was a SHIELD facility that had a barbershop that took you down into the basement in the comic books in the first couple episodes of the or first couple issues where SHIELD appeared in Strange Tales. So I think that may be what they were talking about. And then I also caught a reference to Pinocchio. And I believe Sky was talking about Mike at this point, but the fact that he wants to be a real live boy again. But maybe it wasn't Mike. It might have been someone else she was referring to. But I thought that was an interesting little take on that, because there are so many people that have, you know, non-original parts in them I'm sure people are always trying to recapture something from their past too. I think that can be looked at that way. So
I was a little disturbed to find out that Mike's son is still locked up in some, you know, I don't know if it's a cell or, you know, just a room or whatever, but I was kind of hoping, you know, he could go about living his life. And but
well, see, yeah. Now I guess I took when Mike said that he sees his son in a cell, being that he's just watching video on his eye of that. Like, he hasn't been able to see his son in person. The only way he gets to see his son is through these videotaped encounters. And I guess I took it that, I mean, maybe his son is being held.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I guess I can see it that way.
I guess I saw it more metaphorical than actual.
Okay.
But we just don't know. I mean, because the last time we saw the son, I mean, Sky said she, I guess she said she left him with S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. Because I was going to say he was with Aunt Mindy, but that was in the first episode, I think. And then when he showed up, because he was with them when they were on the bridge,
mm-hmm.
in the mid-season finale. And at that point, we don't know, you know, when Mike got supposedly blown up. I think S.H.I.E.L.D. agents took the Ace. Was it right? Ace? I think that was his son's name.
I think so. Wow. So much has happened since then.
I know.
That's tucked back in my memory. I'll have to go back and check.
I think that's pretty much it. I don't think I've got anything else on my notes here that I wanted to touch on. Was there anything else that we didn't get to that you saw that you wanted? Oh, I know. I did have one other thing here. So the little teaser at the end when Quinn is talking to the two military generals or officers or whatever they are, he's mentioning, you know, selling them these super soldiers. And basically what he's doing is he's talking about privatizing reliable security. He uses the term reliable security. I'm using the term privatizing because that's the word that Agent Hill brought up last week when she talks about she's now, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s no longer a viable opportunity. So she's working with Stark because they are privatizing security. So I'm seeing this interesting, these kind of two technocrats. You've got the Hydra group with the Centipede project within it, building, you know, these super soldiers. And then supposedly on the other side, you've got Stark doing some other kind of security building, which probably has to do with, you know, his Iron Man suits or something like that, or LMDs or something along those lines. So I'm wondering if we're going to see you know, Stark, maybe not Robert Downey Jr., but Stark Industries showing up as a element in season 2, which would be pretty cool.
That would be very cool. Love to see that.
I think that would be a great place for them, you know, because, I mean, Stark was already backing S.H.I.E.L.D. and helping build all sorts of different things for them, like in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. They mentioned that their new repulsor technology comes from Stark Industries.
So, yeah, that worked out real well.
Well, they flew perfectly fine.
That's true.
That wasn't the issue. So, well, I guess that's all we've got for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
Yeah, and if you enjoyed this episode, we love that you guys are participating. And so we would also like you to leave us some feedback on iTunes. Please get on there and tell us what you think. You can contact us by email also, as people are doing, to correct all of my mistakes. We don't mind that. I like to fix those mistakes, so let me know. S.H.I.E.L.D@randomchatter.com is the email. And you can get on Twitter. We're at Agents Podcast, so share that with all of our agents friends. And our Facebook page is facebook.com /agentspodcast and check out the Howling Commandos suitcase. It's up there on our page.
I can see people taking that screenshot and doing some prop replica stuff for it. That would be kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
So also be sure to check out the other podcast that Josh and I do called Green Justice and Arrow Podcast, which by the way, was also renewed for next season. It's based on the TV series Arrow, which you can also find here at randomchatter.com. And if you enjoy this podcast, just like all the great people that were emailing us this week, a number of them all made sure to tell us how much they enjoyed us. Please be sure to share us with your friends. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh, and I want my plane back.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.